Let's bring in Howard Bryant, author of The Heritage, Black Athletes, A Divided America, and the Politics of Patriotism. He's senior writer at ESPN, the magazine, and ESPN.com. Howard, thanks for joining us. Halfway through the book, I started it over the long weekend. You know how I feel about your writing, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you how good the book is. The book stands on its own. But I got to tell you, my friend, well, I was going to say your sense of timing is immaculate, and then I realized this is a debate we've had for years and years and years. It's a debate we're probably going to be having when both of us are old and sitting in rocking chairs and, you know, having, what was that drink we had at the Olympics? The Samaritz, the
Samaritz, absolutely.
Yeah, the flaming coffee with about 75 ounces of alcohol in it. We're going to be having, this is going to be topical then. But my question to you is, and you mentioned this on Twitter yesterday, and I hadn't thought of this, but you kind of reminded black athletes, black football players in particular, that, okay, time to come up with another way of protesting. And I was talking to Corey Hirsch, my co-host, about this, and I said, you know, people, I understand the reaction to this right now, but I think the NFL's gotten itself in even deeper trouble, because one thing I know is you can't legislate patriotism. You can't.
And you also are dealing with people who are used to fighting. I mean, they're players. They're find enemy, win game. I mean, this is their mentality. I talked to some Players Association people last night, and they said, this isn't over. This is fuel. We have people now who thought the issue was dead who are now going to protest or do something because now they're angry at the NFL. I think this is an example of winning a game and then gloating about it and dancing in the end zone trying to get total victory. You already got your $90 million compromise. You've already isolated Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid. You've sent the message to everybody that this is unacceptable and you're going to sanction people with their careers. So why do this? Why are you doing this now? And I think the reason is that I think they're pandering to the president. And they're also sending a message to labor that we don't think that you're unified enough or strong enough to do anything about this.
I got to ask you, this might be an uncomfortable question. It's uncomfortable for me to ask it. But what's the role now for the woke white player in this?
There's a woke white player? I mean,
I'm wondering.
Let's face it. Let's put this on the table, Jeff. I mean, if we're not talking about the WNBA, there are no white players who have gotten involved in this. They don't think it's their issue. They've backed away from this completely. And Chris Long and maybe Josh McCown with the Jets, they're the only players who really have stepped up and said, look, and also the coaches in the NBA. You've got Stan Van Gundy, you've got Steve Kerr, and you've got Greg Popovich who have gotten involved in this. But for the most part, when it comes to race, and it comes to social justice and issues with the police and the whole thing, this has been a black issue. They've left it. The real woke white people who have been involved in this are the young kids who have joined the streets in the protest, but not the athletes. The players have left this to their black teammates. And this is what it's been. Imagine how different this story would be if Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or somebody had joined their teammates and said, listen, this is something that we don't agree with as citizens. They've hung the black players out on their own. But then again, as much as we like to nostalgize all of the heritage of Jackie Robinson and Muhammad Ali and Tommy Smith and John Carlos, name me a white player who stands up on this issue historically at all. They're never there.
The only guy, and the name escapes me, the only guy I can think of is, who was an Australian runner who stood with Carlos and Smith?
Yeah, Peter Norman, absolutely.
And
Peter
what
Norman.
Happened to him? He was vilified.
And what happened to Peter Norman? Exactly. He was destroyed when he got home.
Right.
And so as we talk about this whole notion of a heritage and we talk about the courage that it takes to get involved in this, this is not a club that anybody wants to join. And not only is it not a club that anybody wants to join, but the sports leagues have made it very, very clear what they will do to you, whether you're Muhammad Ali or Jackie Robinson or Colin Kaepernick or Kirk Flood. They're going to get you, and they're going to penalize you, and they've been doing this for 60 years.
Mm. So what do you think? I mean, you know, you talked about having discussed this matter with people in the Players Association, and how this is probably breathe new life into this. What would the next step be? You know, because to me, staying in the locker room, it's like, you know what? If I want to protest something, it does me no good if you don't see me protesting it. This is the thing, like, just the right. Logic of this. This is what drives me around the bend more than anything else, is the assumption that there is some sort of logical underpinning to telling somebody, yeah, you go ahead and protest, just go and do it in a room by yourself. What's the next step here?
Yeah,
what can you,
there.
Well, what can you see guys
doing?
Well,
the next step is we're going to find out. Yeah, we're going to find out what the players are made of. We're going to find out how connected they are with each other. We're going to find out how much this issue really matters to them. We're going to find out what their tactics are. One of the things that I remember talking to Eric Reid and Colin Kaepernick about during the last year was, I always felt that what the players should have done to make it really difficult for the owners was to constantly change tactics. You know, change it up so often that it's a moving target and they don't know what to legislate against. That taking a knee is simply one tactic. It's just one tactic. You can do all kinds of different things to make your voice heard. And so I think that the players have to begin to really strategize and have a strategy to make their voice heard on this issue. I also think there's something else here that has always bothered me, and it's one of the issues that I talk about in the book as well. I don't know where you are in it, Jeff, but this idea that the black athlete, we spend so much time talking about black players, and it makes me sick in so many ways, because when you really want to talk about politicizing sports, you can't do it without 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
9/11 right. Is where the politics, I mean, we were there, during the playoffs.
Yep.
And where your challenger, the bald eagle, and the singing police officers and the military people, and then we find out from John McCain and Jeff Flake, two Republicans, by the way, that all of this was a fraud, that the leagues were taking money to do this, that the Milwaukee Brewers had paid had charged the Wisconsin National Guard $49,000 to sing God Bless America. And that what you've really done is you've got a president right now who has essentially decided to determine who is a citizen and who is not a citizen, and that they're going to determine whether or not you're patriotic. And this is really dangerous stuff. And yet all we do is talk about the black guys.
So when is the next labor agreement up? Do we see the players finally take a stand? I mean, I read Chris Long's tweet today. I mean, he's very outspoken, and I follow him on Twitter. Do we see the players finally take a stand, or is this going to divide them even further in the next labor agreement?
Well, if it divides them even further, they shouldn't have a union, because the message is being sent. You know, the message is being sent directly that as a bargaining unit, we don't really have a great deal of fear of you. We don't fear you at all. We don't think you'll stick together. We think we can do whatever we want. And by the way, you know, what we're really talking about is not simply this issue. We're talking about this on safety issues. We're talking about this on salary issues. We're talking about this across the board. We're talking about this on concussion settlements, that we can do whatever we want because you guys won't stick together. And I think that, I mean, I do hope that the union people that I spoke with last night are accurate, that you've got a fired up membership and that you mobilize, because the last time Donald Trump got involved, the players did mobilize. The problem was it only lasted 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, Corey and I were having this discussion before you came on about, you know, sort of how Roger Goodell, quote unquote, gets away with a lot of this stuff. And, you know, it's occurred to me. Look, I mean, I'm 57, and I can remember when commissioners, well, hell, I covered Faye Vincent being fired. I was there when it happened.
Yep.
A bunch of us were there when it happened. And it may say something about society and, you know, how much we love businessmen and how much we admire businessmen and all that good stuff, Howard. But I look at how much we hate labor and how much we hate unions. But I look at every commissioner in North America right now. There isn't one I mean, Roger Goodell, if he hasn't been fired, no one's ever going to be fired. The only way a commissioner, I think, will be fired for the rest of my lifetime is if there's some sort of, you know, business malpractice. If, you know, he's found out that he's involved in organized crime or something like that. As long as people make money, I mean, all these commissioners, Gary Bettman, Adam Silver, Rob Manfred, Roger Goodell, they're going to be in power till they resign. And that's strange, because I remember when commissioners used to be under pressure.
Well, that's right. Well, and also, well, but and what's the difference, Jeff? I mean, the one thing that you've seen in your lifetime doing this in this business is the fiction, the myth that the owner, that the commissioner was the steward and caretaker of the sport. Mm-hmm. They've gotten rid of that now. Now the job of the commissioner is to maximize revenues. And if that's the job of the commissioner, of course they're not going to get fired because everybody's making money. They're all making money. I was listening to the show before you guys put me on. No owner loses money. Mm-hmm. None of them. Some make more than others. But when you sell your franchise, you make more than what you sold, than what you bought it for.
Right.
And so, absolutely, it all makes perfect sense that the owners are happy with their commissioners, because the commissioners are maximizing revenues at a level that we've never seen before.